He turned and looked at me, even going to the trouble of taking off his sunglasses. Her son, Bodaway, was moving guns for the Tray Tray Nomads. But then he got into business with some folks up this way, and things got a lot heavier.
In what way?
Know anything about ASPs? I shook my head and thought about it, finally, throwing out a feeble bone. Alleged sensory perception? Advanced synthetic polymers.
Well, look what the cat dragged in.
We both turned to see Lola standing on the ramp of the parking lot that led to the cabins, hands on her hips. Sainbrook was faster than I was.
Lola, baby, I was just asking this cowboy where I could find you.
He walked over to her, and they shared an embrace before turning back to me, arm in arm. She gave me a hard look, flipping the black and silver hair from her face.
Where the hell is my car?
Excuse me? I had to think fast and come up with a story so that she didn't just stroll into the Hewlett Police Department looking for it.
My caddy, where the hell is it?
I struck on a scenario. Impound in Rapid City. Evidently there was a speeding violation and a number of parking tickets. She stared at me.
You've got to be joking.
Wish I were.
She turned back to Stainbrook.
Have you two met formally?
He immediately stuck the same hand out I'd shook before, but this time he had a newfound name.
Ray Swift.
Good to meet you. Any friend of Lola's is a friend of mine. I shook the hand, now turned covert.
Well, I don't know if I'd call us friends, maybe just acquaintances.
Oh, Sheriff, now you've hurt my feelings.
He made a show of double-taking me.
Sheriff?
Yep. He glanced at her again. You hanging with law dogs now?
Friend of a friend.
She hugged him closer. Buy me breakfast and give me a ride over to Rapid City so I can get my car.
Well, there's a problem with that.
He turned her, and they started to head back toward the center of town.
Let's go have breakfast, Lola, and I'll explain.
He looked over his shoulder at me and winked.
I'll catch you later, Sheriff Longmire.
Walt Longmire.
Right.
He made a gun with a forefinger and cocked it at me, firing wide.
I'm sure we'll be seeing each other.
I patted my leg and Dog came over, sitting on my foot again, as we watched them jangle up the hill and across the parking lot, leaving me to thank the heavens that my facet of law enforcement was a little more straightforward. I'd briefly dipped into undercover work, but I always had trouble remembering who I was, and that stuff wore me out. I scratched behind Dog's ears again and thought about the 2-inch cube of plastic I'd found in Post's motel room. Advanced synthetic polymers. That ring any bells with you? He wagged, and I took it as a yes.
Well, it sure doesn't with me.
Advanced synthetic polymers.
That's what he said, but then Lola showed up, as she is wont to do, and we had to change gears. Evidently she knows him as Ray Swift.
Vic shook her head. I need a player card.
I know.
We leaned on the trunk of the Orange Blossom special as the bear finished up an interview with Iron Horse, a biker girly magazine. So the cube we found in Post's room takes on a new importance. I'm not sure what it is exactly, but at least we know it's part of the equation. I looked at Vic. I'll just have to get Stainbrook Swift alone so that we can acquire more information. She studied Henry as he talked to the reporter.
Well, we know the one thing that'll distract her more than anything else.
True.
She reached in the window and petted Dog, who was commanding the driver's seat. You think they're going to make him take his clothes off?
I think it's only naked women in that magazine. But times change.
You're just jealous, because he's getting as much print as you are.
She studied me for a moment, and then took my arm and led me around to the other side of the vehicle where we were relatively shaded from public view. Once there, she reached underneath her leather jacket, pulled her signature Glock 19, and handed it to me.
What's this? I glanced at the bear and the interviewer who were paying us no mind.
You want me to speed up the interview?
You know, I'm glad that you came to me with this, because if you had gone to Stainbrook or DCI, they would have said, you know, we got to get rid of this dumbass Longmire because he's so amazingly stupid.
She pointed at the wicked-looking semi-automatic in my hands. Advanced synthetic polymer.
plastic guns?
Partially. She shook her head at me. Realizing your technical advancement pretty much stops at muzzleloaders, I thought I'd save you some embarrassment.
She pointed at the plastic portions of her sidearm.
ASPs.
Oh. I handled the Glock, feeling again how lightweight it was compared to my Colt 1911.
So, how long have they been doing these things again?
There were earlier versions, but the ones that are popular now stemmed from the Austrian military and police service in the early 80s.
Gaston Glock, right?
The safe-action pistol, polymer-framed, short-recoil-operated, locked-breech semi-automatic. She leaned against the car's shiny flanks.
There was a bunch of shit about the reliability of a plastic gun, but that little baby right there holds the lion's share of sales to American law enforcement agencies at, like, 65%.
So, what's the big deal about advanced synthetic polymers if they've been around for 35 years?
I don't know.
She took her sidearm and stuffed it back in her pancake holster. Even the tan color of the cube is no big deal. They've been making that color for years. Hell, 3/4 of the guys in Afghanistan and Iraq are carrying them.
She stretched, raising her arms, which drew her shirt from her jeans, revealing her midriff.
And we still don't know who the second ATF agent happens to be?
Nope.
I don't think it's Lola.
I couldn't help but chuckle.
I don't think so either.
The Cheyenne Nation finished up with the Fourth Estate and came over, resting his back on the Tangerine Dream along with us.
You make the centerfold?
I refuse to be airbrushed.
He raised an eyebrow and shook his head at her.
I feel like such a piece of meat.
We have a job for you. Your ex has attached herself to the ATF CO, and I need to talk to him about this ASP thing.
We loaded into the General Lee and drove toward the center of all things Hewlett. Vic shut the growling engine off and glanced around at the milling motorcyclists just now dragging themselves out of bed after their previous night's revelries. When are all these people going to go home and return to being a problem for their local law enforcement agencies?
I pulled the handle, stepped into the alley, and caught a chorus of a garage band version of Lynyrd Skynyrd's Simple Man. It'll start winding down the day after tomorrow.
So the clock is ticking?
In more ways than one. I turned to Henry. How do you want to play this?
He clasped the bridge of his nose with a thumb and forefinger.
It will not be hard. As soon as she figures out that he does not have a car, she will attempt to employ her namesake.
You think you can get word to Stainbrook that we're out back?
I think so. What do you want me to tell Lola when we get to Rapid and her car is not there?
Knowing her, she's not going to go into the sheriff's office voluntarily. So you can just come back out and tell her that it was returned to Hewlett, compliments of the South Dakota taxpayers.
You are sure that DCI will be through with it later today?
One can hope, but if not, we'll deal with that burning bridge when we get to it.
Without another word, we watched as he disappeared through the beer garden into the restaurant proper. I turned to Vic.
I guess when Stainbrook comes out, we'll pretend that we're taking him into custody and walk him up to the HPD and talk.
I don't think it's Eddie the Viking either.
What?
The second ATF agent.
You keep narrowing the field.
I shook my head.
Let me know when you get it down to one.
Agent Stainbrook was impressed with the interior of the USS Pequod, even if Vic sitting in the back with a dog wasn't.
I think we should hang a shingle on this thing and let everybody know that we're establishing squatter rights in it and opening up an office.
Stainbrook glanced around the interior of the behemoth. What are they intending to do with this thing, anyway?
I don't honestly know. Go fishing, I guess.
I turned in the seat and looked at his profile. So, what's the big deal about ASPs?
All right, first off, I want you to know that it is against agency policy to give you this information in any form, and I'm placing myself and my people in a precarious position by telling you any of this.
I nodded, and then he looked back at Vic, who made the motion of locking her mouth and throwing away the key. I assumed Dog was exempt.
He took a deep breath and started in. In 1986, the Congressional Office of Technology Assessment reported that a 99% metal-less gun could feasibly be made of advanced synthetic polymers, with metal used just for springs, but that it was only a possibility.
He pulled out his own sidearm, which looked remarkably like Vic's, only slightly larger. This is a Gen 4 Glock G22, and it's got ASP parts like the grip and trigger guard. Now, it's difficult to recognize one of these on an X-ray scanner when it's disassembled, but it can be done. He handed it to me. This weapon is 83% metal by weight. I held the lightweight 40. So? In 88, there was a company based in Scottsdale, Arizona, called Dust Devil Development, that claimed it was going to have a prototype of a completely ASP weapon in less than a year. Well, a lot of agencies figured it was just hot air to get investors interested in the company. But Congress lost their minds over the fact that these weapons could be impossible to detect. They ordered an investigation, and suddenly Dust Devil Development ceased to exist. Shortly after that, Congress passed laws that banned the production of any kind of fully ASP weapons.
Scottsdale, huh?
He nodded. You see, the difficulty had been in the parts of the mechanism that would wear out. Those had to be made with metal. It just wasn't any ASP that was able to stand up to that kind of punishment.
Till now?
You got it. Enter Bill Titchener, a polymer technician out of Silicon Valley's Special Materials Division. Titchener develops a ceramic material that's supposed to replace the metal exhaust valves in automobile engines, and this stuff is supposed to be as strong as steel. Well, this does not go unnoticed by the FBI, and they clamp down on the Special Materials Division and classify the formula for the stuff. Vic leaned forward. If they were so spooked by this, then why didn't they shut down production completely? They did that for the car exhaust valves, but when they went through Titchener's files, they found designs for all kinds of applications, especially worrisome being the concept drawings for a small automatic pistol.
Uh-oh. Wait, it gets worse.
The CIA, seeing an opportunity, tried to argue with Congress about the viability of continued development. Vic pulled himself up between us.
The CIA?
The agency's position was that the weapon would be used for anti-terrorism purposes, and in situations where foreign powers had magnetometer security, they could still get weapons into hostage situations.
Vic laughed. And vice versa.
It all got shut down eventually. But here's an interesting tidbit. 6 weeks after the Department of Justice shut Special Materials Division down for good in 1996, Bill Titchener is found without a head or hands in a dumpster behind 4014 North Goldwater Avenue in Scottsdale, Arizona.
That's where Dust Devil Development was working on the plastic gun?
Precisely. There was communication between Titchener and Dust Devil, a go-between. He paused. That turned out to be Delce Torres.
I thought about the conversation I'd had with Lola the first time we'd met.
Chief cook and bottle washer of the Crossbones Custom Bike Shop, somewhere in the Phoenix area.
Stainbrook nodded again. Maryvale, yeah. So I'm assuming that Delce got involved, and therefore Bodaway, because he was familiar with the fabrication of different materials and not likely to notify the Congress of his advancements.
The ATF man leaned back in his seat. Not likely then or now. Suspicious hit-and-run in Nogales, just this side of the Mexican border last year.
So what are the chances they've actually developed a fully ASP weapon?
He laughed, but it wasn't funny. Since my man Post got his hands on that sample you found in his motel room, I'd say pretty good.
So that's what the cube was, a sample of metal tensile strength advanced synthetic polymer.
He nodded. We've already got people in Cheyenne with your DCI. And they've confirmed that that's what it is. Vic looked at the two of us. So how does a shitbird like Billy the Kiddo get involved in something like this?
Sainbrook sighed. Material fabrication at his shop.
We've been there.
Where?
The chop shop. Kiddo's place in Rapid City.
I was aware that he was staring at me. It was after hours. Not that I'd know the difference, but it didn't look like they were up to anything that complicated. Just the usual bodywork and paint.
I took a breath.
And there's something more I should let you in on. Kiddo's got an entire shrine in his back room that looks like the beginning of the Fourth Reich.
He waved a hand at me. I'm not surprised. And I don't give a shit. I don't want to appear callous, but when you've been doing this job as long as I have, you got used to seeing all kinds of bizarre stuff. I really don't care what their screwed-up belief system is. I just want to keep dangerous weapons out of their hands.
And make sure that they pay their taxes,
Yeah, that too, he thought about it. Billy V doesn't strike me as being all that smart.
Well, he doesn't know the meaning of the word fear, but then he doesn't know the meaning of a lot of words. The ATF agent cocked his head and looked at both of us.
But he does know material fabrication.
Yep.
Vic smiled. Kind of a chopper savant? She shrugged. And muscle?
He turned to look at her. For who? She looked out the side window at the throngs of bikers down the street.
Good question. We parted company with Agent Sainbrook at the Hewlett Police Department annex, and were assured by DCI that Lola's Cadillac would be released and sitting outside by the time she and the Cheyenne Nation returned from their round trip. DCI's mobile lab unit was preparing to return to Cheyenne, and TJ was helping pack up the equipment. We don't have the ability up here to match the slugs, but I already shipped the one you gave us ahead, so as soon as I hear anything, I'll let you know.
Sounds good, I glanced around. Speaking of, has anybody seen or heard of the whereabouts of the presumed shooter, Billy V, kiddo?
You'd have to ask the locals about that.
I nodded, and we shook. Thanks, TJ. She held my hand.
You look like hell. I don't suppose it would do any good to tell you to head home and go to bed.
You know, women are always trying to get me to go to bed. The chief of the Wyoming Division of Criminal Investigations lab unit shook her head and glanced at Vic.
Take care of him, will you?
She went out the door, and Vic stepped into my line of sight. You know, if I wasn't in the picture, I've got a feeling you could have a pretty active social life. I turned her by the shoulder, and we started toward the police department's office. I don't think I'd have the energy for it. Pushing open the door of the HPD, we found Chief Nutter in a heated conversation with a couple of bikers.
Look, it's not our responsibility to make sure your bike is safe if it's parked in a questionable area.
The leather-clad dudester howled.
It was parked on Main Street,
Nutter shrugged.
What can I tell you? It's a tough town this week.
He showed the disgruntled bikers the door and turned to us as they made their way out.
What do you want?
In the interest of interdepartmental cooperation, I was wondering if there had been any sightings of Billy V.
Probably back beneath the rhinestone-encrusted rock he crawled out from under.
So that would be a no. Nutter glanced around.
Hell, find Deputy Dog. He's making arrests at a banner raid around here. As of last night, I don't have any more room in my holding cells. What'd you do to him, anyway?
Oh, just gave him a little confidence. The phone rang, and the chief answered.
Hewlett Police Department.
There was a pause, and then he continued.
Well, when was the last time you saw your boyfriend?
Really? That hardly ever happens during rally week. I waved goodbye, and we made a hasty retreat outside,
Vic looking past me and then down Main. I don't think Nutter is ATF either.
Agreed. The streets were a little subdued, but it was still early as we made our way downtown, a half block away. Vic checked across the street for the possibility of a kiddo sighting, and I kept an eye to the right, peering behind the tents that sold T-shirts, hats, jewelry, and biker paraphernalia.
How come you didn't ask Stainbrook who his number two was?
It didn't seem appropriate.
Not Billy V?
Probably not. I shook my head. Maybe rather than trying to figure out who's undercover, we should be focusing on the case. She smiled.
My, aren't we testy this morning?
I'm beginning to think that I can't operate without sleep as well as I used to. There was some noise coming from the area behind one of the tents on Vic's side, and I could just make out the back of Doherty's head. Vic was already on the move, and I did my best to keep up. I figured we were going to have to do another intervention, but we were mildly surprised to find Corbin with a forefinger bouncing off the chest of a tall, skinny biker.
And if you don't get your act together, you're going to have to call your accountant boss on Monday and explain to him why you're spending the work week in the Crook County Jail in Sundance, Wyoming.
The biker looked a little shell-shocked and started to say something, but Doherty cut him off.
Not another word!
He pointed down the dirt alleyway.
Go!
He gestured in the other direction at another man, and I had to cover a smile while the entire crowd drifted away, having been denied the drama. He was turning to go himself when he saw Vic and me standing there.
Hey!
Hey yourself! I nodded toward the dissipating crowd. Looks like you've got things under control. He rested a hand on his sidearm and nodded.
I think I'm starting to get the hang of this.
Vic put her hands on her hips and couldn't help but smile along with me as we followed him back onto Main Street.
He held a hand up and paused traffic as we crossed. "Hey, Troop, you haven't seen Kiddo around, have you?"
"No."
He slowed and glanced at me.
"I'd imagine as much trouble as he's in, he's probably going to lie low until his court date. Why?"
"Just curious as to where he's hanging out and with whom."
"Probably back in Rapid, don't you think?"
"Maybe." He stepped up his pace, yelling at a guy down the block who had just shoved another.
"Hey, knock it off over there!"
He turned to look at us as he sprinted away.
"If you find out anything, let me know."
Vic stepped up beside me, and we watched him separate the two individuals. I glanced at her from the corner of one eye. "What do you think?"
"I think you've created a monster."
There was a buzzing in my jacket that I'd slowly come to realize meant either Bodaway Torres or I was receiving a phone call. I'd been meaning to hand it over, but I keep forgetting that I have it. With Vic looking at me questioningly, I pulled the cell phone out, studied the screen, and hit the button.
"Hello, punk. You owe me."
"I always owe you."
"Yeah, but you owe me big time now. Did you find out who sprung Kiddo?"
She readjusted her phone.
"You don't really owe me, Dad. I just went over to courts and mentioned your name, and they made me a copy of the blanket bail receipt. If I'd known how much of an effect your name had, I'd have been throwing it around a lot sooner."
"It's only effective in certain circles."
"The other thing I've discovered is that helping you with cases is a great way of getting and holding your attention."
"So, who fronted the bail for Billy V?"
"I bought a new couch at Sofa Mart in Fort Collins. It's called the Home Run Sofa. It's a recliner in red leather with white stitching, and they don't deliver."
"Katie,
I need you and the bear to go down and get it and bring it up the fire escape in the back. It's kind of tight around the corners, but I think you can make it."
"Katie, please." I could hear her rustling a piece of paper.
"Does the name Robert J. Nance mean anything to you?"
Chapter 14.
Why would Bob Nance put up Kiddo's bail if he wasn't involved?
I don't know.
He's smart and at the same time dumb enough with plenty of cash to front an operation like the one that Sainbrook described.
She sipped her lemonade and watched the traffic two-wheeling by as we sat on the running board of the Pequod again.
"So why don't we go in there and get the chief to look up his buddy Nance and see what he's been up to?"
"Because he's Nance's buddy. So, I'd just as soon Dougherty assisted us with this."
"You think Nutter is somehow in on it?"
"No. I just think it's an uncomfortable situation with the two of them being so cozy." I patted the fender of the military vehicle. "Nance bought him this battleship, among other things. I think if we're going to make a run at Nance, then we'd better make sure we've got our ducks in a row."
"Really?"
"He's just the type to be able to buy or arrange a way to get out of this. And I'm not here just to get the outlaw bikers. If Nance is the money behind this operation, he's not going to just let it go. If he's using these fabricators to get a prototype together, then he's likely to take it to the next level and become an arms dealer."
"Internationally?"
"Just because the mainstream government doesn't want the things made,
doesn't mean there isn't somebody else who wouldn't."
"Like the CIA?"
"Exactly." "So, we need a rundown on Bob Nance to see if there's anything in his background that might connect him to all this before we do anything?"
"Yep."
"You don't think he's crossed his T's and dotted his I's?"
"I'm beginning to wonder if anybody's ever given him a good hard look."
"But this crap's been going on since when? 88 or 89?
"Yep. With Titchener killed in 96 and Torres Sr. just last year."
"That's some pretty slow development."
"Hard to get it done when no reputable manufacturer will touch it with a 10-foot advanced synthetic polymer stick."
"And your technicians keep ending up dead."
She sighed.
"When does the Blue Knight get off?"
I pulled out my pocket watch. "About 5 minutes ago." Almost on cue, the young patrolman crossed the street toward us with a familiar man, his hands cuffed behind his back. Speak of the devil and associate.
Dougherty slowed as we stood, bringing Eddie the Viking to a stop with him. "Hey, any news?"
"Some, but we'd rather speak confidentially if possible." I glanced at the biker, who was, as usual, pretty well inebriated. "What did Eddie do now?"
"Try to get a random woman to show him some body parts, and when she wouldn't, he showed her some of his in hopes of some sort of trade-off."
I looked down at the man, who continued staring at the sidewalk,
giving us the impression that he might charge us with his plastic horns.
"Really, Eddie?"
he muttered. "I was set up."
"How? You should have seen those tits."
I shook my head and turned to Corbin.
"Hey, can we use one of your computers to hook into the National Crime Information Center and do a little research?"
"Sure." He disappeared inside, and we waited a few moments before Chief Nutter appeared and started toward Main Street without looking at us.
"Let's go."
The office reception area was overrun with the hired guns from other counties, towns, and the highway patrol. The only quiet place with a computer was Chief Nutter's office to the left.
"You mind if we use Nutter Butter's office?"
He glanced up from fingerprinting the Viking.
"Go right ahead."
Once inside, I pulled the chair out and indicated to Vic that she should sit in it. "You're a lot faster on these things than I am."
"You got that right."
She eased herself into the rolling chair and began working her magic.
"This is going to take a while with just his name. I wonder how many Robert Nances there are in the U.S.
I pulled out the borrowed phone.
Katie took a photo of the copy